This article is brought to you by the best-selling books 8 Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne, because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to de-escalate arguments during meetings. A practical method for cooling conflict before it costs you the room. In short, when an argument erupts during a meeting, your goal is not to decide who is right. It is to restore enough calm that the group can think clearly again. Intervene early, before the exchange becomes personal. Use neutral language to slow the pace and redirect attention to the shared problem. Do not resolve the conflict on the spot. Stabilize it first. Definition: de-escalate arguments means to reduce the emotional intensity of a workplace dispute so that productive conversation can resume. It is the deliberate act of slowing conflict down, cooling tone, and steering a group back toward the problem they came together to solve. I watched a project manager lose her entire team in about 11 minutes. The meeting had started normally enough, two colleagues disagreeing over a deadline. Within minutes, voices were raised. Someone brought up a failure from 3 months prior, and the third person in the room had quietly pushed back her chair and was staring at the ceiling. By the time the argument burned itself out, nothing had been decided. The relationship between those two colleagues never quite recovered. And the project manager, who'd sat in silence hoping it would resolve itself, told me afterwards she simply had not known what to do. The ability to de-escalate arguments in a meeting is one of the most valuable communication skills you can develop. Most people know it matters. Far fewer have a reliable process for doing it. This article gives you one. Why arguments in meetings are so hard to stop. The difficulty is not the conflict itself. Disagreement in a meeting is often healthy. The difficulty is the speed of escalation, and the way an argument in a room pulls everyone into it, whether they want to be or not. When two people clash publicly, the emotional stakes rise fast. Each person is not just defending a position, they are defending their standing in front of their colleagues. That means the normal levers of good communication, listening, pausing, reconsidering, become harder to reach. The brain is in protection mode, not problem-solving mode. If you are the one trying to intervene, you face a particular kind of pressure. Step in too aggressively, and you look like you're silencing someone. Stay quiet too long, and the argument sets like concrete. It becomes the event everyone remembers. There's a narrow window for effective action, and knowing how to use it is the whole game. I have seen senior leaders mishandle this badly, not because they lacked authority, but because they lacked a method. Running a productive meeting requires more than a good agenda. It requires knowing what to do when the room turns against itself. What you need before you can intervene. Before any step-by-step process can work, two things must be in place. The first is composure. You cannot steady a room if you're caught up in the emotion of it yourself. That means you need to manage your own reaction before you open your mouth. Take a breath, slow your pace deliberately, and keep your voice even. Your calm is the first signal the room receives that the situation is manageable. The second is positional clarity. You need to be clear in your own mind that your job in this moment is not to judge the argument or solve the problem. Your job is to restore the conditions in which the group can function. That distinction matters. The moment you pick a side, you lose the trust of the other person, and your ability to de-escalate collapses. If you struggle to stay grounded under pressure, the core framework for tense workplace conversations is worth applying before you go into any high-stakes meeting. It builds the internal stability this kind of intervention depends on. How to de-escalate arguments during meetings. A step-by-step process. Step 1. Intervene early, not late. The moment you notice the tone shift, that is your moment. Not after the third round of interruptions. Not after someone's voice cracks with anger. The earliest possible intervention is always the easiest one. You are not waiting for a full argument to develop. You are responding to the first clear signal, a raised voice, a personal accusation, two people talking over each other. The phrase does not need to be elaborate. Hold on, let us slow this down, said calmly, and clearly is enough to create a pause. The pause is everything. Without it, the exchange has its own momentum, and you are just noise in the room. Step 2. Name what is happening without judging it. Once you have created a pause, your next move is to name the dynamic, not the content. You are not commenting on who is right. You are describing what the room is experiencing, something like, there is clearly a lot of energy around this. I want to make sure we actually get somewhere, so let us take this one piece at a time. This does two things. It acknowledges that the feelings in the room are real, which matters to the people who are feeling them, and it frames what comes next as purposeful, which gives the group a reason to follow your lead. You are not suppressing the conflict, you are redirecting it. Step 3. Separate the people from the problem. After naming what is happening, separate the personal exchange from the underlying issue. The argument is almost never really about what it appears to be about on the surface. Ask a question that pulls the focus back to the shared challenge. What is the specific outcome we are trying to reach here? Or can we agree on what the actual decision in front of us is? These questions are not rhetorical. They are navigational. They give both parties somewhere to go that is not at each other. If you need to go deeper on opening this kind of conversation once the room has cooled, the article on how to start a difficult conversation, as is blocking your team, will give you a strong method for what comes next. Step 4. Give each person a genuine hearing. This step is the one people most often skip, and it is the most important one. Before you move towards resolution, both parties need to feel heard, not agreed with. Heard. Take one person at a time. Before we move on, I want to make sure I understand your position. Can you tell us the single most important concern you have here? Then do the same for the other person. Listen without interrupting. Reflect back briefly. So what you are saying is, this slows the room down and begins to shift the energy from combat to conversation. People who feel heard are far more willing to hear others in return. You are not mediating a settlement. You are creating the conditions in which one becomes possible. Step 5. Redirect to common ground. Once both sides have been heard, look for the piece of the problem they agree on. There is almost always something. Two colleagues arguing over a timeline both want the project to succeed. Two team members clashing over a process both want the outcome to be good. That shared interest is your anchor. Name it plainly. It sounds like you both want this delivered on time and done well. The question is how. Let us start there. This refrain does not dismiss the disagreement. It repositions it as a shared problem rather than a personal contest. And that shift makes resolution possible. Step 6. Propose a clear next step. Do not leave the group floating after the tension drops. Decide the smallest productive action you can take from where you are now. That might be agreeing on a specific question to answer by the end of the meeting. It might be scheduling a shorter, separate conversation between the two people directly involved. The goal is forward motion, not resolution by force. A simple, concrete next step tells the room the meeting can still produce something, and it gives everyone a reason to stay engaged rather than retreat into damage control. The deal method for resolving conflicts that fracture team cohesion is a useful framework to apply once the immediate tension has settled and you are ready to work through the underlying issue properly. Step 7. Follow up after the meeting. The meeting ends, but the work is not done. Conflict that erupts in front of a group leaves residue, even when it is handled well. Check in privately with both people afterwards. Not to relitigate what happened, but to signal that the relationship matters more than the argument. A brief, direct conversation, even 2 or 3 minutes, can prevent the resentment that festers when people feel the incident was simply papered over. It also gives you information about whether the disagreement is resolved or simply deferred. When the argument is between two colleagues who will not back down. Some conflicts run deeper than a single meeting. When two people in the room have an ongoing friction, the standard steps above will cool the immediate exchange, but they will not resolve what is underneath it. In this situation, your role shifts slightly. You are not just managing the moment, you are protecting the rest of the group from being drawn into a private war. After using steps 1-3 to create space, explicitly acknowledge to the room that this is a conversation the two people need to have directly, not in the meeting itself. Say something like, "This is important enough to get right, and I do not think we have the time to do it justice here. Let us agree to set aside a specific time to work through it properly." Then hold that boundary. Do not let the meeting become the arena for a conflict resolution that requires more care than a group setting allows. For persistent interpersonal friction between colleagues, the approach in how to diffuse tension between two colleagues who refuse to cooperate goes further into what is needed when the conflict predates the meeting and will outlast it. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Where people go wrong when trying to cool a room. The mistake: waiting too long to intervene. Why it happens. Most people hope the argument will resolve itself, or they fear looking heavy-handed. What to do instead? Intervene at the first tone shift, not after full hostility has set in. An early, light touch costs you nothing. A late intervention costs you the meeting. The mistake? Taking a side, even subtly. Why it happens? One argument often sounds more reasonable. It is tempting to let that show. What to do instead? Stay rigorously neutral in your language. Even a slight lean toward one person will be felt by the other, and you will lose the trust you need to manage the room. The mistake? Trying to solve the problem while emotions are still high. Why it happens? The instinct is to fix it fast. Problem solving feels productive. What to do instead? Stabilize first. You cannot reach good decisions through a window of heightened emotion. Cool the room, then solve. The mistake? Silencing conflict without acknowledging it. Why it happens? Shutting it down feels decisive. What to do instead? Always name and acknowledge the tension before redirecting. Suppressed conflict resurfaces later, harder and louder. Strong feedback cultures understand this. If you want to build one, the article on why effective feedback is the backbone of workplace growth is worth your time. A pre-meeting tension checklist. Use this before any meeting where you know conflict is likely. Number 1. Have I identified the specific flashpoint this meeting is likely to surface? Number 2. Do I have a neutral opening statement ready if the tone turns hostile? Number 3. Am I clear that my role is to manage the process, not arbitrate the content? Number 4. Do I have a reframing question prepared that focuses on the shared goal? Number 5. Have I considered whether the real dispute needs a separate, private conversation rather than a group resolution? Number 6. Do I know who in the room is most likely to escalate and who's most likely to help me steady things? Number 7. Am I in a state of composure I can maintain under pressure? Take these 7 questions seriously before you walk into the room. The best de-escalation is the kind you never need because you prepared well enough that the environment did not allow the temperature to rise. You can also apply the principles of delivering difficult feedback in a way that does not trigger defensiveness to your post-meeting follow-up conversations, particularly when you need to address someone's conduct during the argument itself. The difference between cooling an argument and resolving one. Here is the truth of it: de-escalating an argument in a meeting is not the same as resolving it. Do not confuse the two, and do not let anyone else in the room confuse them either. Your goal in the moment is restoration, restoring the conditions under which the group can work. The resolution, the real work of understanding what caused the conflict and how to prevent its recurrence, belongs in a different, more deliberate conversation. When you treat a cooling down as a resolution, you plant the conditions for the next argument. People feel managed rather than heard. The issue goes underground. This is the mistake that turns a one-time flare-up into a permanent fracture. The process above gives you the tools to de-escalate arguments effectively and to protect the people and the work in the room. Use the meeting to stabilize. Use what comes after to build something better. Frequently asked questions. What does it mean to de-escalate arguments in a meeting? To de-escalate arguments means to reduce the emotional intensity of a conflict so the conversation can return to productive ground. It involves cooling the tone, slowing the pace, and redirecting attention from personal positions to the shared problem the group is trying to solve. How do you de-escalate arguments without taking sides? Stay focused on the process, not the content. Acknowledge both people have strong feelings, then redirect the facts or the decision the group needs to make. Name what is happening without judging who's right. Neutral language is your most powerful tool in this moment. What should you say to de-escalate a heated argument at work? A phrase like, "I want to make sure we are all heard, so let us take this one point at a time," slows the exchange without dismissing either person. Avoid agreeing with one side. Keep your voice steady, your language neutral, and your focus on the next step forward. Can you de-escalate arguments during a remote meeting? Yes, but it requires more directness. On a video call, you must name what you're observing because body language is harder to read. Muting the room momentarily, asking a neutral question, or calling a short break are all effective tools. The same principles apply. The delivery must be cleaner. What are the signs that an argument in a meeting is about to escalate? Watch for raised voices, repeated interruptions, personal language such as "you always" or "you never," people talking over each other, and physical withdrawal like crossed arms or turned bodies. These are early warning signals. Intervening at this stage is far easier than managing a full breakdown. What mistakes do people make when trying to de-escalate meeting conflict? The most common mistakes are intervening too late, taking a side, and trying to solve the problem while emotions are still high. Another is silencing the conflict rather than redirecting it. Shutting people down without acknowledgement creates resentment that resurfaces later and is harder to manage. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblickthorne.com to get your copy.